Thank you very much, Rabbi Turchiner. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining the program and for listening to all the shiurim. I hope you decide to stay for as many as you can, because I know that they're all very, very enjoyable and we can learn a lot from them. I would like to thank those who dedicated my shiur today. Thank you to Rina and Irving Gottesman and Esther Katz. The topic that I'll be focusing on today is probably one of the better known ones of this entire program. It's the story of Yaakov Avinu and his struggle with a mysterious adversary, which leaves him injured. And then there's a subsequent prohibition that stems from his injury. I'm gonna share my source sheet, and we'll be able to go through the story that way. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to unmute and ask them. It's difficult for me to see questions on the chat during this year. But if there are any questions, I'll hopefully be able to answer them after. So Yaakov will never walk alone. The story of Yaakov Avinu. So let's see the story first, and then I'll explain where I want to go with it exactly. And we read this in the weekly Torah reading nearly a month ago, part of Parshat Vayishlach. And the Torah tells us in source one, he arose during the night, he took his two wives, his two maidservants, his 11 children, and he crossed the ford of the Yabok. Yaakov takes his family in preparation of his meeting with his brother Esav, and he crosses the river with them, and he took them and brought them across the stream, and he took across what was his, and Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. For some reason, Yaakov stays behind, and a man wrestles with him. The psukim don't tell us who this man is. Several of you may know already what the different commentators tell us, but we'll get to it soon. And when he saw that he could not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip became dislocated as he wrestled with him. This mysterious adversary injures Yaakov in the area of his thigh. And he, the angel... Well, we have the English translation that gives away who it is, but he said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But he, Jacob, said, "I will not let you go unless you have blessed me." But when dawn breaks, for some reason, the battle needs to end. And one says to the other, "Let me go." And the other says, "Not yet." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, the angel, the mysterious adversary, says, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, because you have commanding power with an angel of God and with men, and you have prevailed." The angel, the mysterious adversary, he changes the name. He changes Yaakov's name from Yaakov to Israel, which we'll see a bit more on later. And Jacob asked and said, "Now tell me your name." And he said, "Why is it that you ask for my name?" And he blessed him there. And now Jacob wants to know the angel, his opponent's name, and he won't tell him. And Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, "I saw an angel face to face, and my soul was saved." And the sun rose for him when he passed Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Yaakov has a long-lasting reminder of this battle, of this wrestling match, because of the injury he sustained. "Therefore, the children of Israel may not eat the displaced tendon, which is on the socket of the hip, until this day, for he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the hip sinew." So for some reason, this injury that Yaakov suffered becomes a lasting prohibition for the Jewish people, first taken upon by his children, and then given to us by Moshe at Har Sinai when we received the Torah. For some reason, this is a prohibition. To this day, we can't eat what's known as the sciatic nerve. And normally when an animal is slaughtered, either you have to remove this nerve in order to make that part of the body kosher, but it's a difficult process, so the common practice is just to sell that part of the animal to a non-Jew. And Jews cannot eat it. So there's several questions that arise from this story. There's several missing details. And I would like to fill in some of those details and look at an interesting approach by two commentators as to whether this story was even real or not. did this encounter with an angel really happen? And then finally, the main part of the shiur, which is trying to understand the nature of the injury. What was the purpose of the injury? What's its significance? And what does it symbolize? Because it's not just a regular injury suffered in battle. If it later on became a prohibition and a commandment that lasts to this day, it certainly has some larger significance that we need to try and understand. So first, I found a website that discusses the origin of Jews in China. And when these Jewish roots were first discovered, these Jewish these different Jewish, whether it was the Jewish practices and origins were discovered, if you look at the end of source number 2, it says the Jews were also known as extract tendon teaching, as a description of the way that meat was prepared by removing any tendons to conform with the Torah. The Chinese Jews and the heritage of Jews in China was apparently, they were best known for the fact that you have to remove part of the animal's tendons, part of the nerve, in order to, so that the Jews can eat it. That's what we were known for dating back in China. That was the most noteworthy commandment that we had, which is interesting to see. So just to fill in some of the missing details from the story, we saw that Yaakov stayed behind. So Rashi tells us in source number 3 that he had forgotten some small jars and he returned for them. And the main point to focus on there is that Yaakov returned alone to retrieve these jars. And Rashi continues to tell us, which we already know from the translation, but the Hebrew word of v'yavik is unclear in its meaning. Rashi tells us it probably means that they were wrestling, which we know thanks to the English translation. And his last point, our rabbis of blessed memories explained that he was Esav's guardian angel, which we already saw again given away and what many people know. And Rashi gets this from the Midrash. This was Esav's guardian angel. It wasn't just any angel. And this ups the stakes even more. And it lets us know there really is a lot of symbolism in play here. Because it can be just a random occurrence that the evening before Yaakov is supposed to meet Esav, after years of not having seen him and running away from him, he encounters his guardian angel and has a battle with him, which leaves Yaakov injured. So was this a real encounter? There's two interesting approaches by the Rambam, Maimonides, and the Ramban, Nachmanides, when it comes to any story that involves angels in the Torah. There are several of these stories. There's the story of Avraham admitting 3 angels into his tent as part when he was recovering from his bris milah, when he was performing the mitzvah of Hachnasat Orchim. There are several instances of angels, and are we supposed to take them literally, or are they just figurative and just coming to teach us a lesson? So first we have the Rambam. Maimonides was a hardcore rationalist who believed that any appearance of an angel in the Torah was merely a dream or a prophetic vision. And he tells us in source number 4, we have already shown that the appearance or speech of an angel mentioned in scripture took place in a vision or dream. It makes no difference whether this is expressly stated or not, as we have explained above. This is a point of considerable importance. And he says, absolutely, every single time it happens, it's a dream. And he brings different proofs from different verses that no matter where an angel is mentioned, it's a dream. We don't actually have angels coming down and speaking to humans face to face. And he goes through every single example in Chumash, but he also mentions the story of Yaakov. He says, note this as well, the top of the second paragraph, for it is one of the great mysteries of the law. The same I hold as the case for when it is said in reference to Jacob, and a man wrestled with him, which is our story. This took place in a prophetic vision, since it is expressly stated in the end that it was an angel. And etc., he goes on to prove it from the Pesukim. And it's just an interesting approach that a story that we see in the text, he understands as fundamentally different than what we may originally think. That even though we're not explicitly told that it's a dream, and he also proves it from the fact that Yaakov had a dream with angels when he was leaving, when he was first running away from Esav, the dream with the ladder. He says when he was returning, he had another dream with an angel. On the other side, the opposing view, we have the Ramban. The Ramban, he saw more supernatural forces in play in this world, and affecting the day-to-day life. And I only brought a small piece of his response to the Rambam, and a difficulty that he raises upon him. And he says in source 5, the Rambam said that this was all a dream. Yet how can it be if Yaakov limped on his thigh when he woke up? How could Yaakov have suffered an injury from a dream? And why he said, for I've seen God face to face and he saved my soul, as the prophets did not fear that they would die because of prophetic visions. If this was all a dream and just a vision, why would Yaakov be thankful that he was saved? It seems like a gross overreaction to a prophecy. No prophet was scared of dying after such a dream. Those are just some of the contradictions he raises on the Ramban. And we don't know what's right or wrong. These are just the two fundamentally opposing views. However, there's also the Abarbanel, which unfortunately I don't have a translation for, but he tries to resolve this contradiction between the Rambam and the Ramban. And he addresses the difficulty that the Ramban raised. And he says, it's very possible that this was a dream, this was a vision, yet how is it possible that Yaakov suffered a very real injury? It's because it was a psychosomatic dream. The struggle with the angel was so real in Yaakov's mind that it left a physical impression on his body that caused him to limp. It was such a real dream to him. When he was struck on his thigh, it seemed so real that when he woke up, he really had a pain in his thigh. And that could really happen, and it can occur to people nowadays in different dreams that they have. He has other difficulties with the Rambam's approach, but he resolves this one. And I just thought it was just an interesting take on this whole idea of angels in the stories in Tanakh. So now to the meat of the shiur, the main part is, what's the significance of the injury? So when I started researching the topic, I thought I would come across one or two ideas that I could bring and share with you. But as I was researching it, I realized that there were dozens of ideas. Almost every single commentator has a different approach or a different idea that we can learn from this whole story. And of course, it was too much to bring, but I did try to bring as many as I could. And it's just amazing to see the different approaches to learning a text, to learning a story, and the different places where we can go with it. Now, there is no right and wrong in these ideas. It's just different, various lessons, hopefully, that we can learn from the story of Yaakov's injury and what it means, what the importance of the thigh is. So the first idea I would like to share with you is from the Sefer HaChinuch, written by an anonymous author in this 13th century. And he writes, it is from the roots of this commandment of not eating the sciatic nerve, that it is to serve as a hint to Israel that though they will suffer many troubles in exile by the hand of the nations and by the hand of the descendants of Esav, the Jews should trust that they will not perish, but rather their descendants and name will stand firm forever, and that their Redeemer will come and redeem them from their oppressor. He says it's symbolic. It's symbolic between the everlasting struggle between the descendants of Yaakov, the Jewish people, and the descendants of Esav. And this hint stems from the fact that the angel who fought with Yaakov, our forefather, who according to tradition was the guardian angel of Esav, that same Midrash again, wished to eliminate Yaakov from the world, he and his descendants, but he could not get the better of him, but anguished him in injuring his thigh. Likewise, Esav's seed anguishes the seed of Yaakov, but in the end, the latter will be saved from them, as we find with respect to our forefather, that our son shone to heal him and he was saved from pain. So will the son of the Messiah shine and he will heal us from our pain and redeem us speedily in our days. Amen. Says the Sefer Achinuch, it's all symbolic. Like I said, the battle between the everlasting struggle between the descendants of Yaakov and Esav, and the injury that Yaakov sustained represents the losses and the struggles that we face throughout generations. And even though we will end up emerging victorious, it will still come at a price throughout. And this is, of course, a completely symbolic idea. It's not literal in the text, but nevertheless, a very nice idea and a very nice takeaway from the Sefer Achim. The Radak has a different approach, and he also addresses the question of why is it that it's become so eternalized and ingrained in our mitzvot? Why is it that we even keep this to begin with? And the Radak says, the children of Yaakov adopted this prohibition for themselves in commemoration of their father. And we'll see shortly what this commemoration might be, whose thigh muscle had been injured. They in turn commanded their children to abstain from eating this part of any animal. They continued until the Torah was given and it became law. Moses recorded the custom of the Israelites not to eat this organ as one of the 613 commandments. Although the Torah does not generally consider it necessary to justify God's legislation with a reason, in this case, since the law had been observed as a Jewish tribal custom for so many hundreds of years prior to the giving of the Torah, we are told how the custom, which became enshrined in Torah law, originated. At the time, it only began as a custom. Yaakov's children and his descendants took it upon themselves as a custom to commemorate their father. But it became so entrenched in Jewish custom that when the Torah was given, it was given as a mitzvah, as a commandment. And that's why it sticks with us to this day. Some more ideas that we can see. One of them is from Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor and his commentary. He says the commemoration of not eating this part of the thigh, the sciatic nerve, is because Yaakov, our forefather, fought with the angel, and the angel could not subdue him. And it's a commemoration of glory and greatness. It's celebrating that Yaakov Avinu, our ancestor, could not be taken down by an angel. What a great celebration. What a great memory. Every time we know we have to avoid the Gid Hanasha, the sciatic nerve, we remember this battle between Yaakov and the angel. The Chizkuni offers several different ideas of the purpose of the injury and the reason why it came. First, he says, the reason Yaakov suffered this injury is because he was frightened of Esav. He did not trust in God fully. That's in source number 10. He allowed himself to be frightened of Esav in spite of God's assurances. That's why he was injured. But not only was it Yaakov's fault, it was also his children's fault. I mentioned at the beginning that Yaakov, for some reason, was left alone. Says the Chizkuni, this was the punishment to the children of Yaakov for leaving him alone, for allowing him to be exposed to hostile forces at night. You're not supposed to leave someone alone, walking alone at night. And because of that, the prohibition of not eating this part of the animal extended to the children and their children and their children until this day. So that from now on, they will have learned their lesson and would practice the commandment to accompany their father. It's a punishment and a lesson to the children for failing to assist Yaakov in his return journey. And this is really where the name of this year came from. Yaakov will never walk alone. Rather, Yaakov will never walk alone again. Because now we learn we cannot let him walk alone, or for that matter, any older or wiser person, as the Chizkuni says, as the translation says. A different approach brought by the Chizkuni is similar to one we just saw, that it was a commemoration of Yaakov's amazing battle with an angel. They did this out of a feeling of pride in their founding father, that he managed to survive such a battle. And a third approach to this verse, due to their father Yaakov having sustained an injury, his descendants voluntarily decided not to eat the part of the body of an animal that had been injured in their father's body. It's a symbolic idea. Yaakov was injured in that part, so they won't eat it ever again to serve as a type of remedy and a type of healing, which really plays into the entire theme of a book of illness and healing, is that the idea of not being allowed to eat this part of the animal, the sciatic nerve, is to heal as a healing, as a remedy for Yaakov's injury. I have a few more ideas to share. Like I said, there's many various ideas that can be understood from the story. The Rashbam, very interestingly, blames this all on Yaakov. He says the reason Yaakov faced an angel, the reason Yaakov was injured, is because he was running away. He didn't return to get small jars. He didn't forget anything. He was running away. He says, after he had transferred all his belongings, he intended to flee in a different direction so as to avoid a face-to-face encounter with Esav. And there an angel wrestled him so that he could not flee. And again, the fact that Yaakov was struck and was lamed was because the Holy One, blessed be, promised him, yet he fled. He blames Yaakov. Yaakov was not righteous in this story. There's no symbolism here. He's looking at the text. He took his entire family across the river, and Yaakov ran away. And that's why Yaakov was stopped, and that's why Yaakov was subsequently punished. Another approach, a more mystical one, a Kabbalistic one, is taken from the Kli Yakar, who's a more Kabbalistic figure. And he says, in Source 12, we find in the statements of the rabbis that deep things, the comprehension of which are difficult, are compared to tendons. He says to the tendons, the nerve, which we're told not to eat, it's a hard thing. The difficult things are likened to a tendon. They're difficult, they're tough as a tendon. And he says this is a hint, this is an allusion to the hidden secrets of the Torah. And it's telling the Jewish people, it doesn't mean you can't eat the tendons. It means you can't eat the tendons, but what it's coming to teach us is that we can't try and understand the secrets of the Torah because they're so easy to misinterpret. And only those select righteous few are able to, but the general public have to avoid it. Now, when I'm reading the text, I find it difficult to understand it. That's why it's the mystical approach. But I think it's incredible to see the array of ideas and the variety of thoughts that come into place when reading just one story. This is just one event that occurs, yet there are so many different approaches that we can take, whether it's literal or midrashic or mystical. There are so many different ideas, and it's incredible to see the different ways that the rabbis can learn the Torah. And that's what I'm really trying to show here. That there's no one idea, but that there's so many different ways of learning from this story. So just a few more with the time I have left. Says the Tur, the Baal HaTurim, he says, this is an idea we haven't seen yet. Some commentators claim the angel tried to inflict a disabling blow on Yaakov, one that would disqualify him from performing service on the altar. We said this was Esav's guardian angel. Well, Esav's guardian angel was trying to disable, he was trying to permanently injure Yaakov so that Yaakov could no longer perform the service at the temple, given that he was supposed to receive as part of the birthright that he took from Esav, that he had bought from Esav. And Esav's angel was trying to disable Yaakov so he would no longer be able to complete the service, this service, and then the birthright would go back to Esav. And this plays into the whole idea of this adversary being Esav's guardian angel, and this was the purpose of the injury. And he also writes that could be a commemoration, like we've seen before, whether it's like making a point of fasting on the anniversary of a father's death, just like some people may hold a kiddush or sponsor a shear or any type of thing. Not eating the thigh was the idea of commemorating this event. And another thought he says is remembering the miracle. The miracle that Yaakov was saved from the battle with the angel. So just two more ideas that are really important. One of them is from the Abarbanel, which unfortunately I don't have a translation for. But he views this whole story in a very interesting way. He says this whole thing was a wrestling match. We saw that they were wrestling, but he says the entire back and forth was part of the rules of wrestling. First, you have two adversaries trying to knock each other down, and normally when one is stronger than the other, the other one, in this case the angel, was trying to inflict a sneaky blow of injuring Yaakov in the leg in order to cause Yaakov to fall on the ground. That was the purpose of the injury, in order to beat him. But Yaakov was brave and strong, and it didn't help. And then when the sun came up and it was time for the battle to end, Yaakov asked for the angel's blessing, because it was the custom that the loser in a wrestling match, in this type of battle, would bless the victor as a sign of their defeat. And that people will know that the victor is the one who won the battle. And when Yaakov then asked the angel's name, it's because it was also the custom to inquire as to the loser's name, so that because the loser of such a battle now becomes subservient to the victor, and whenever the victor will summon them, they have to show up. And it's just interesting how he sees this whole thing as this whole wrestling match and the whole name and blessing. I wanted to end with one last idea from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zichrono Livracha, who unfortunately passed away recently. And he has two different articles that suggest the same idea that I wanted to share, which I attached in the link, and it's an incredible idea. I couldn't really cut and edit his article because every word he uses is so perfect. So I just brought a big chunk of it, even though I won't be able to go through all of it. But the idea he suggests is incredible, this whole story. He says, Yaakov, his entire life, wanted to be like Esav. That's what the name Jacob signifies. Yaakov was named Yaakov because he tried to grab onto Esav's heel. He tried to be like Esav. He bought his birthright. He wore his brother's clothes. He took his brother's blessing. He wanted to be like Esav. All that changed in the great wrestling match between Jacob and the unknown stranger. With this match, Yaakov was finally becoming his own person. This angel was telling him, Esav's guardian angel was telling him, when he changed his name to Israel, leave your name Yaakov behind. Become your own person. Be strong in your own identity, in your own belief. Don't long to be someone else. This was a struggle Yaakov had his entire life. And Rabbi Sacks explained so beautifully, this is a struggle the Jewish people have to this day, that throughout the centuries, we struggle with our identity. We see the Greeks, we just celebrated Hanukkah. We see the Greeks, we want to be like them. We see the European culture, we want to be like them. We have all these surrounding cultures that try and overtake us, and we try to conform to their identities, yet we have to stay strong and proud in our Jewish heritage. And I would just like to add on his idea, he doesn't explicitly say it, is that the idea of Yaakov was created when he tried to grab onto Esav's leg. That's when he became the person who wants to be like someone else. But it only comes full circle in the battle with Esav's guardian angel. When Esav's guardian angel grabs Yaakov's leg, it comes full circle from when Yaakov grabbed someone else's leg. Now his leg is the one being grabbed. And what the angel is saying is, Israel, you are one who has strived with both God and man. You need to become your own person, strong in your identity. And Rabbi Sacks ends by saying, I believe the challenge issued by the angel still echoes today. Are we Jacob, embarrassed by who we are, or are we Israel, with the courage to stand upright and walk tall in the path of faith? That's what the injury is. The injury was this transformation of who Yaakov's entire identity was. It's that we can learn that we need to be proud in our Jewish customs and our Jewish faith. And throughout history, this is a struggle. Yaakov Avinu struggled with it. Our ancestors struggled with it. And we too struggle with it. And I would just like to end here by saying, I obviously can't go over everything again, but we did see a wide variety of different ideas. And I think it's important to note that there is no right and wrong here, just incredible lessons that we can take away from this. If anyone has any other ideas they would like to share, you can reach me at nkline@torontotour.com because I'm sure there's many more. I hope you have a great day. And just this last source is a song based on these verses by Mordechai Ben David. If you have some free time this afternoon, I recommend listening to it. Thank you very much and have a great day.